of Judy Kay, Dunn County versus Judy Kay. Representing Dunn County, the petitioner here is Nicholas P. Lang. Mr. Lang?
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Nicholas P. Lang. I represent Dunn County.
You're going to have to speak up.
I'm sorry.
The acoustics here, even with an expensive sound system, are not terrific.
Thank you. This case is a protective placement case under Chapter 55 of the Wisconsin statutes, and it's here today before this court because of the funding limitation language added to various sections in Chapter 51 and Chapter 55 by Act 92 of the Wisconsin, of the 1995 Wisconsin legislature. That legislation was enacted directly in response to this court's decision in DER versus La Crosse County. In the DER case, the court concluded that the legislature did not intend to limit a county board's obligation or duty to fund protective placements in the least restrictive placements, the least restrictive environment under Chapter 55 of the Wisconsin statutes to the state and federal funds that counties receive and county funds appropriated as matching funds. In reaching that decision, the court focused on the public policy contained in Chapter 55 and specifically the absence of a statutory limitation on the liability of a county to provide funding for protective placements. Act 92 changed the statutes. It required for the first time in Chapter 55 that funding be considered as a part of making the protective placement decision. It changed the public policy contained within Chapter 55. It expanded the factors that are required to be considered in making a protective placement to include the reasonableness of the placement, given the benefits, given the cost of the placement, and the benefits that could be realized by an individual. It requires the court to consider the state and federal funds that are available and county funds that are required to be appropriated to match state funds. And it requires the court to consider the reasonableness of the placement in given the number of persons or projected number of persons who can be expected to request protective placement and given the limited financial resources.
Mr. Lang, when this case was before Judge Stewart, what kind of showing, if any, did the county make in regard to a lack of funds from the county's point of view? Is there proof in the record that Dunn County just couldn't afford to contribute anything?
I believe there is.
What is that information?
Dennis Shishowski is the director of the supervisor of the long-term support unit, and he provided testimony that all of the available county funds, or the portion of the human services budget that was dedicated to providing services in this area, were committed to persons who were already receiving services, and that there were no additional funds available. And specifically with respect to the medical assistance waiver funding program, the KIP-1A funding that he was eligible for, he testified that it is not a requirement of that program for the county to provide funds in order to receive state or federal funds in conjunction with that program.
Well, is the county contributing anything at this point to Judy Kay's KIP?
Yes.
How much?
Presently, she's placed in the community pursuant to the court order. Because of her particular needs, the county has been able to access additional medical assistance personal care funds for her. I believe it's about 9 hours per day. With the combination of state and federal funds received through KIP 1A, medical assistance personal care funds, and county funds that are provided, the cost is actually quite low at this time. I believe it's around $600 per year for replacement.
Was that?
It sounds like something that's going to break the county's budget.
Well, I think the scope of the problem exceeds this individual case. I don't think it's reasonable to just focus on one case, because you could say that about every case. And that's what the U.S. Supreme Court in the Olmstead decision focused on as well. If you only look at it on a case-by-case basis, you'll never be able, a state or a county, will never be able to prove that this case will break their budget. The consideration has to be focused on all of the people who have to receive services, all of the people who want to receive services. And not just in human services, but across the board in all of the county departments, I think, at some level, and the limited financial resources that are available.
Enlighten me on under 5506(9)(9)(A), which talks about matching funds, and it talks about the funding requirements, and what is the county? Is the county matching funds? What is your total match here? It's Justice Brooks asked. Is 600? That is your total matching fund.
The county, as I understand it, the county is contributing $600 for her placement as it exists at this
time. That was after the trial court ordered that you make appropriate arrangements for the least restrictive environment. What were the county's match for that?
Well, with respect to Judy Kay, she was placed in the Trempealeau County Health Care Center, and so I don't believe there was one, that it was covered by medical assistance.
Okay. Now, so I understand this, and you have to give me a little leeway since I don't deal with these issues very often, although I did write DER. There's about $125 available, as I understand it, from, and I don't mean to make this a catch-22, either what you classified as federal or state funds for her care.
Yes.
Per day.
Yes.
That, and how much does the county put up?
Well, I don't know the exact figure for her at this time. I can say generally, just going back to what the county is required to appropriate, there is a base level where the county is required by statute to make an appropriation under Section 46.40. The county is required to make an appropriation in order to receive state funds, and that's the community aids.
And how much is that?
The required match that Dunn County was obligated to provide in 2000 when this case was pending was about $185,000.
And that was for everybody?
Correct.
And how many people is everybody?
I don't know the exact. Well, that includes all of the. Well, I back up. That base amount actually. It's non-targeted. The community aids money is non-targeted. It's meant, it's available for use for all of the human services that a county department might provide.
And how much money do they get from the state or federal government?
Well, in that year, as I said, the county was required to appropriate $185,000. The county actually appropriated $1.8 million. As part of that.
And for all human services?
Yes. In addition to that, there was $5.6 million of anticipated funds to be received from state and federal funds, and another $1.2 million in anticipated receipts from consumer collections and insurance collections.
You mentioned, you can't just look at this case. You have to look at the long range or what this potentially could, what effect this could have. Tell me what is the concern that, say, we would say, you know, that you have to provide this. Is this something that you're saying that Dunn County citizens cannot afford? Or what are you concerned about?
Well, I think the court in Olmsted recognized that there are competing public policy considerations. On the one hand, the intent to provide services to as many people as can be done, and on the other hand, the fact that financial resources are in fact limited. If the court were to say, place everyone, just go and do it, it would require reallocation of money in the county budget.
Well, I noted that, for example, you multiply $237 times 365, you get approximately, you're in the $80,000 category per year. Is that something that you find is going to break the bank? Is that what you're talking about?
Well,
you just don't think you have a responsibility, which is.
The latter is not correct. It isn't a matter of there's just not a responsibility. The problem is that the financial resources available to provide all of these services are limited. There isn't enough money to do it. As a practical matter, if the court were to order that all of the people on the waiting list be removed immediately and placed in community services.
Which is how many? Well, is that 60? Is that all that?
$95 for KIP 1 and KIP 1B funding. The current waiting list is $95.
Right.
For developmentally disabled persons alone, it would cost about $500,000 simply to remove everyone from the waiting list, but that would not, or $600,000. That wouldn't address people who are in an intermediate care facility or a nursing home for whom a recommendation might be made that they receive services in the community setting.
Mr. Lang, how do you get to the waiting list? Has there been a determination that the person is appropriate for a least restrictive or a lesser restrictive placement?
Well, the waiting list for these ME waivers funding program, as it exists in the county and in every county, is based largely on priorities that are dictated to the counties by the State Department of Health and Family Services. The priority, the emphasis is on, and I think it's debatable whether this is the best way to allocate scarce resources, but the emphasis is on providing additional services to people who are already receiving services, as opposed to providing services to those with the greatest need. And there's a distinction there that's, I don't know how fine it is, but the priority is to whoever's getting services now, instead of giving more people services, we want to give the people who are getting services more services.
So if you're on the waiting list, it doesn't necessarily mean that you'd be moved to a different facility. It might mean that you'd be given some additional services at your present placement.
Yes, and in fact, some of the people on the waiting list aren't the question of facility or community-based services in connection with the placement isn't an issue. A lot of people are receiving or would like to receive protective services or other services in their homes. There isn't a court action or anything governing where they live, or that they would just like to receive services in their homes.
Mr. Lang, what would be the consequences of to Judy Kay if you won this case?
Well, that's a hard question to answer because the resources available to the county are limited. We do have a waiting list, and Judy Kay, the funding, the state and federal funding through the KIP 1A program that was available for her at the time that she was placed in the Trumbull County Healthcare Center. Once she was placed there, that was reallocated to provide additional services to other people who were in need of them. And as a practical matter, placement at the Trumbull County Healthcare Center I think it's a distinct possibility that could occur.
That would what? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
I apologize.
It's a distinct possibility that
she could be placed, she could be removed from the community placement and placed in the Trumbull County Healthcare Center at the intermediate care facility.
Are you saying that the $600 that the county has given for her care was taken from somebody else and there was no increase in the human services budget?
I think that's a way of putting it, yes, because there's still a waiting list. And so whenever money is allocated for services for one person, by default, it's not available for others.
The fund didn't expand. It just was moved differently, reallocated among people.
I believe that's correct.
Well, what would the result be if the court affirmed the trial court order? What was the result for the county?
We would no longer be able to rely on the limitation statute in these proceedings, and it would be inevitable that some of the placements that are currently not community-based would have to become community-based. The easy answer is raise taxes, but
what's the fiscal effect?
Well, every county is subject to a levy limit, and under state statute, Dunn County is pretty close to theirs. And so, as a practical matter, the county board would have to eliminate or reduce services in other areas, including possibly in the human services department.
In order, the question is, what's the fiscal effect? The dollar figure? Do you have a dollar figure approximately?
Well, to remove developmentally disabled, all of the developmentally disabled persons off the waiting list would be about $600,000.
A year?
Yes. And again, that doesn't take into consideration people who aren't on the waiting list yet for whatever reason, or people who aren't on the waiting list because they're you know, like an intermediate care facility or a nursing home, and they're not seeking community placement.
And how does Stewart's order require that everybody on the waiting list receive services?
Not specifically, but I think that's the implication that flows from it, because the judge found that the statute wasn't applicable, and as a practical matter, if the statute's not applicable, then anytime a community placement is recommended, the available financial resources would not be able to be considered.
But did he find it not applicable to Judy Kane, or did he find it not applicable to everybody on the waiting list? I don't understand.
I believe that he found it generally to be not applicable. That I admit his decision on that isn't as clear as it might have been, but I interpret it to mean that the statute is invalid.
And how does Dunn County's caseload compare with the caseloads of other counties? For example, Milwaukee.
Every county has waiting lists. Every county does. And Milwaukee County has, I think, half of the protective service cases in the state.
You have any idea of the numbers?
No, I don't. I absolutely.
It's the county's position that in interpreting the statute 9A, that the county doesn't have to pay anything. Because, as I understand it, you get the $125 and you're not required to make a contribution above that. Is that your position?
In part. I think Judy Kay, in her brief to the court, identified the balancing test, and then they call it the limit, the absolute limit. I think the balancing test would be applicable in a situation where the community AIDS funds aren't dedicated fully to providing services for someone. In other words, there's money there, and it's just being sat on, and nothing productive is being done with it. And I think you could even extend that further and say that whatever additional money the county allocates, again, if you're not using it, then you look to the balancing test. But in this case, in Dunn County, for many, many years, the community AIDS funds have all been expended. The $185,000 is just a drop in the bucket of the entire budget.
So your position, at least in part, is that because zero county funds are necessary to receive state and federal funds in the amount of $125, the county can't be required to contribute additional amounts.
Yes, but that's the next step after the community AIDS funding is required to be appropriated. It's been dedicated or allocated for cases. It's not available, and so that puts us into KIP 1A.
I've heard a lot of discussion regarding matters of great concern, that is, availability of money and policy. I want to focus on how you get your interpretation from the statute.
With respect to the county is required to provide zero.
That's right. Counts. How can you get an interpretation from this statute that says the county may not be required to provide funding in addition to? There's already something going on there.
In 2000, the county provided $185,000 as it was required to do for community AIDS. That the required county funds are now accounted for. That leaves state and federal funds, and that's what these AMI waiver program monies are. They're state and federal funds that are. That are received by the counties to provide medical assistance services, except not in an institutional setting.
Can the county get more money if it put up more money? Can they get more money from the federal government or the state government to assist Judy Kay plus the other 60 on the waiting list plus anyone else who needs additional services?
Not necessarily, not from the state government necessarily. The federal government, like under the KIP 1A program, 41% of the, 59% of the money that comes from that is federal money. It's received by the state and then channeled to the counties. The state matches up to a certain point so that the federal money and state money equal $125. It's likely that if the county would expend additional money in a proportion of 41% to the federal government's 59%, that additional federal money would be available to provide the placement. So that the balance between the 125 and whatever the placement costs would most likely be covered by federal funds.
So you could apply for federal grant money if you put up 41 cents for every 59 cents the feds put up.
In a sense, I think the county's expenditure would the county's expenditure would it's kind of complicated how the, and I don't even fully understand it, to be honest, how the medical assistance money passes from the federal government down to the state. But if the county spends the money, I think the state, the federal money will be accounted for and end up at the county level. It's not necessarily through a grant program, I don't believe.
Mr. Lang, you spoke about potential extra cost of $600,000. And then you also spoke of the levy limit.
Pardon me?
Oh, the levy limit, the county's levy.
Yes.
Would the $600,000 take you over the levy limit?
I'm not sure of that, but again, the $600,000, it's kind of an illusory figure because it would only represents an estimate of only of known people who are on a waiting list. It's really, and again, it's not, the scope of this exceeds this particular case because every county has the same problem it's facing, the same consideration, and that is, if we have to eliminate, if everybody who, financial considerations aside, would be an appropriate candidate for community placement, if they have to be in a community placement, I think it's going to require the county governments to seriously reallocate money to meet that need.
Could I ask one question, clarification? Is the court in Judy Kaye's case deciding between community placement and intermediate placement of some kind, or is it possible we're deciding between community placement and a waiting list somewhere?
I guess I think the court was choosing between community placement and placement at the Trempealeau County Health Care Center.
What kind of placement is Trempealeau?
Well, Trempealeau County Health Care Center is a pretty diverse facility. They have a nursing home there, and there's also an intermediate care facility.
Is it the least restrictive placement?
I believe that it is if you apply the definition of the least restrictive placement as it exists in the statutes at this time. One of the issues that I see my time has expired.
I know, but I would suggest that one, you finish the sentence, and then two, since you haven't had very much time to argue this case because you've been giving the court basic information, I would suggest that, as I see it, you've got a statutory interpretation issue, equal protection, due process, and ADA, Americans with Disability Act,
yes.
Right? So why don't you attack what you think is your best and strongest argument, and then you will have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
I'll begin by finishing the
answer. Right, good. We can remember what the sentence was.
I'm trying to. It contains an intermediate care facility for developmentally disabled, and that it's not the same thing as a nursing home. It's considered an institutional setting for purposes of.
It's not a community setting.
Correct. Well,
what's it going to be? Statutory interpretation, legal protection, due process, or ADA? I feel as if I'm on a
equal protection
TV program.
As indicated in the briefs, it hasn't really been squarely addressed in Wisconsin as to whether or not in the context of a case like this, whether a rational basis or strict scrutiny standard review would be appropriate. It's the county's position that it should be the rational basis test. That's based on the the city of Claiborne versus Claiborne Living Center case, where the U.S. Supreme Court held that they use the word mentally retarded persons were not quasi-suspect class. And I think that position was confirmed and advanced in a case I've cited. It's not in the brief, but in the Statement of Additional Authorities, University of Alabama versus Garrett, where the court again found that the 14th Amendment does not require states to especially accommodate the disabled, and any action that they direct, and based on that classification, is subject to the rational basis standard of review. And as it relates,
Counsel, on the constitutional issues that you're not discussing, do you read the trial court's decision as establishing basically a constitutional right to a community placement for a person protectively placed who is otherwise physically appropriate for a community placement?
No, I don't. The constitutional issue was raised by Judy Kaye, but the circuit court judge, you know, again, it's not terribly clear, but he suggests that the problem is not with the statute, but with the way that it's applied. And I don't read his decision as being one that establishes a fundamental right to a community placement.
Well, the judge did speak in terms of due process and equal protection considerations as influencing his decision. And under the circumstances, I think it could fairly be read as establishing such a right.
Agreed. Yes, I think that's true.
Regardless of fiscal impact.
Yeah, I think you can read the decision that way. I think the court was more focused. I think that was supplemental to the, I think the court's primary focus was on how the county applied the statute and that it didn't apply, I guess, alternatively.
In the equal protection argument, in Watts, we compared Chapter 55 people with Chapter 51 people, right?
Yes.
How does that comparison work now, if your position is upheld?
Well, in terms of equal protection, if the Watts decision elevated the least restrictive environment standard to constitutional status, I think it would have implications in an equal protection argument or in an equal protection decision. But I don't believe that that was clearly in mind when the Watts decision was made.
Watts was procedural, wasn't it? The issue in Watts was procedural? The issue of periodic reviews?
Yes. The Watts decision, it was the stated rationale was equal protection, but the remedy was to provide additional due process procedural safeguards. The issue in Watts was that there's a difference between the procedures available under Chapter 51 and Chapter 55 in terms of continuing and annual or regular court oversight of the commitment or placement. And the equal protection came into play because the difference between Chapter 51 and 55 couldn't be justified. So the rationale was an equal protection rationale, but truthfully, the procedures are due process procedures.
We don't have that issue here because Chapter 51, the subjects of Chapter 51 placements are similarly under the funding limitations, and the statutory language about taking into consideration the impact on the county.
Yes, looking at it in that way, the disparity, the kind of disparity or the quality of disparity that existed between Chapter 51 and Chapter 55 does not exist here because the statutes, both of the chapters, are fairly consistent in they are consistent in the way they address how funding needs to be considered when making a determination where placement or commitment will occur and the level of services to be provided.
The statutory amendments that were made by the legislature in response to the DER decision when they both chapters 51 and 55?
Yes, both chapters were affected by that statute, or by that act, by Act 92.
I don't have the 51 statute in front of me. What provision of 51 is comparable to the funding provision that's before the court today, 55069A.
51, let me see. I have it right brief, I apologize. Yes, and 51.42, the patient's rights section, which is 51.61, takes into consideration funding.
Was there a provision that says that the county can't be required to a fund as you have it in 55069A?
Yes.
And that is?
I don't have the site on the tip.
Okay, that's, is it in your brief?
Sub 4 pertains to responsibility of the county government and
that
states those responsibilities and then states the funding limitations issue in much the same language as Chapter 51 and Chapter 55.
That's correct. And in Chapter 51, much of the funding limitation language had already existed before the enactment of Act 92. And so some of the statutory provisions in Chapter 51 that address funding limitations were not affected by Act 92. Some were, but Chapter 51 had statutes in it already that had that as a consideration.
Mr. Lang, thank you. You will have several moments in rebuttal. Mr. Hagopian, representing Wisconsin Coalition for Advocacy, in Judy K. Raise or lower that podium as you see fit. There's a button in your left corner.
I'm fine if everyone can see me.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Mitchell Hagopian. I, together with my colleagues Roy Fremming and James Parent, represent the respondent Judy K. in this matter. If this court finds that the county dollar defense portion of 55069A means what Dunn County says it means, the courts will be effectively prevented from engaging in the review required by Watts and recently reaffirmed by this court in Goldie H. in the cases where it is needed most, the cases where counties have a clear financial conflict of interest. Further, it will trespass on Judy K's rights to due process, equal protection, and freedom from discrimination under the Americans with Disabilities Act. Having said that, we don't believe this court need address the constitutional or ADA issues in order to affirm the trial court's judgment. This case can be resolved by the language of the statute itself. We believe the county dollar defense should be read to limit a county's funding responsibility only when no state funds are available to match county dollars. In this case, those state matching funds remain available through the KIPP 1A program. Our interpretation gives meaning to all the words in the phrase funds required to be appropriated to match state funds, while Dunn County renders them their surplus funds.
I thought those were federal funds that are just funneled through the state. Is that not true?
No, that is not true, Justice Sykes. The funds that the federal government provides to Wisconsin for the medical assistance program, of which the KIPP 1A program is part, are funds that are deposited to the state of Wisconsin and pursuant to 20.001 of the statutes, deposited in the state's general fund.
But they come from the feds.
They originate from the federal government. Not all of them. About 59% of them do. 42% are state funds. In this case,
but the 42% is encompassed within that 125 base, right? Is that not right? Maybe I'm misunderstanding the whole scheme. It's very complicated.
I'll try to explain the $125. The $125 in initial KIPP 1A money that would be available for Judy K's placement in this case, 41% of it comes from state GPR funds, and 59% of it comes from federal Medicaid matching funds. Now, the money that actually that the county actually receives, and that's where I think the distinction needs to be made here, comes from the state. The state of Wisconsin issues the check to Dunn County for those funds. The county has no relationship with the federal government. So the fact, and for funds that Dunn County might have to expend in excess of the $125 in order to secure additional state matching funds, every 41 cents that the county puts up would generate 59 cents in additional revenues. That money would come from the state. It would originate with the federal government, but it would come from the state and would be paid from the state treasury to the counties.
But that's just because the mechanics of it, according to the mechanics of it, the money doesn't go from the federal government directly to the county. It goes to the state, but it's still federal money.
No, it's state money. It's state money because the state is the one who received it, not the county. And the federal government gave it to the state to use to fund Medicaid services.
But under that interpretation, there would be no federal money implicated at all, because once it comes to the state, it takes on the character of state funds for purposes of statutory interpretation. Does that make any sense?
I think it does make sense. The case, the Court of Appeals case in KB v. Walrath wrestled with this question precisely, although the difference there was whether the funds that the nonprofit received were from the county or from the state. And the Court of Appeals determined that the fact that funds that this nonprofit received originated with the state was not relevant because they were provided from the state to the county and then paid to the nonprofit organization. So that court was quite clear that the original source of the funds was not relevant.
What's the point of including federal funds in the itemization of the different funding sources in the statute contract? That's totally out of it once the money comes to the state.
Well, there would be the possibility that there would be federal grant money directly available to counties from different agencies that through DHSS in Washington on a periodic basis that could fund services or administrative costs. And so I think that was what the legislature was referring to when they referred to those federal funds.
What's an example of that?
I don't have a specific example of that, but I believe that that's what they were speaking of. I would like to address a couple of points that were made, kind of clarify some of the issues. Speaking to the federal grant issue, Justice Abrahamson discussed, when she discussed the additional money that would be available to the county, she referred to that money as federal grant money, and I want to clarify that it's not federal grant money, it's federal Medicaid dollars that would be available to match the county funds in this case.
Who gets that money? Who gets that federal money?
The state of Wisconsin gets that money and then distributes it to the counties who put up the required match.
So the county advises whom that they're going to put up additional money to get this 59?
The State Department of Health and Family Services.
So it all goes through the state?
It all goes through the state, that's correct.
Mr. Agwopian, if you were asked, and I'm going to ask you right now, to tell us what the rule is that should come from this case, what is it that you're asking for? What do you want us to find?
Well, ultimately, we'd like you to find that the county dollar defense language of 5506 sub 9A is a violation of the ADA equal protection and due process and is therefore invalid altogether. I don't think the court needs to do that. I believe that you can, on a statutory interpretation basis, find that in Judy Kaye's case, which is the only case we're here about today, that it doesn't apply because the county, the limitation on funding as a matter of statutory interpretation does not apply to Judy Kaye, because if the county puts up the match that's required to match the state funds, there is sufficient money in the KIPP 1A program to fully fund replacement.
Well, let's sort of state it positively, it seems to me, if that's your position, because it's hard to understand it. Is it your position that 55.069A requires the county to put up county funds if there are state funds available to protect this person?
No. Yes.
You understand that? Your answer to that is yes.
Yes.
So you don't view this as a restriction on the county. You view it as a requirement on the county. But the county put up funds where it can get state funds.
That's a nice way of putting it. But I think it also acts as a restriction, because there would be times in individual cases when there would actually be a point when there would not be state funds available to match those dollars. And at that point, not reached in this case, under our proffered statutory interpretation, the county obligation could end.
So you get up to number 32 on the waiting list, and all of a sudden there are no KIPP funds available. Tough luck.
Well, that would be another case. It's not presented here. I think that at that point that case would present equal protection problems, ADA problems as well. But that isn't necessary to reach it in this case.
Also, since you're talking about ADA problems, just enlighten me. How does this violate the ADA? What is the specific violation that you're talking about?
Well, the specific violation would be the continued institutionalization of Judy Kaye, even though the professionals are in consensus that she doesn't need to be there, that she can be placed in the community. Under the Supreme Court's decision in Olmstead, it was found to be discrimination under the ADA if institutionalization continues and it's not justified by professionals, the treatment professionals who recommend placements. So the violation is quite clear, and I don't think that Dunn County has at any point indicated that there hasn't been a violation of the ADA in this case.
But isn't this basically this case about how to fund possibly protective placement? That's what we're talking about here. But you feel that because of the Olmstead case, that there is a violation?
Yes, Your Honor. Yeah, in fact, we believe that the discrimination is occurring in the context of the protective placement action itself. That because of the interpretation Dunn County has adopted, county dollar defense, that their interpretation, although couched a little bit today and I think maybe retracted from it a bit, is that they don't have to pay one penny of additional county money to fund these protective placements. And that simply flies in the face of everything that was in the Olmstead case.
Counsel, I thought in response to my question that there was a little change. As I read or looked at the briefs, I thought the county's position is they didn't have to pay anything, and yet that wasn't the response. There was some reference to the 9.89% matching funds for county aids that's required, and I think that was the position in the amicus brief of the county's association. Can you respond to that? As I understand their argument, that 9.89 is required, and that it's all that is required, and that fills any statutory requirements set out in 9A.
Yeah, I believe if you were to read the county's brief fairly, well, at least in the reply brief, it's clear that the position they were taking in the briefs at least was that the KIPP 1A funds in this case that were available to the county required zero match, and that was their limit. Our response to that is, first of all, that the match under the community aids that they're talking about, first of all, it's not a required match. Counties under the statute that deals with that, which is 51.423 sub 2, talks about required match, but then says that if the county doesn't put up the required match, then the state funds, the 91% that match it, will be reduced accordingly. So there is no actual requirement, even in community aids, that the county put up the full 9.89% of match. Is that responsive to your question?
Yes, thank you.
I'm still not clear about this. Does the county's community aid obligation, how is that linked to KIPP 1A funding?
It's not linked at all to KIPP 1A funding, other than that is one source of the funds that can be used by counties to match the the state funds above the $125 rate.
Can be used. All right.
Can be, right.
Is there an obligation when a county receives KIPP 1A funding to match any of those dollars?
No, there is no obligation. Unless they have, because the match programs start from the point of the county putting the money up. They don't start the opposite. The state doesn't say, here's $59, county, because we gave you that $59, you must now put up $41. That's just not the way any of them work, including community aids. Instead, the county has to say, we're willing to put up $41 in our own money, and then the state says, since you did that, we will now provide you with $51 or $59 in state KIPP 1A funds. So that's the problem, I think, with the county's interpretation of the statute, is that since all the programs work that way, when the statute was enacted, clearly the legislature must have known that that's how their matching programs worked. And if you adopt the interpretation of Dunn County, there is never a point when the county would ever be required to appropriate any funds to match state funds. It just would never happen. And that would render the exception in the dollar defense language meaningless and transform the language into counties are not required to put up any money of any sort at any time for the fund protective placements.
When you talk about the dollar defense, there were some questions from various justices as far as the numbers, the expense. I noticed in the amicus brief from the Wisconsin Counties Association that I think there's a genuine concern about the overall effect in the dollars we're talking about, and I gather it's literally millions of dollars of being kind of having no idea that various counties or all the counties will be expected to come up with. Is this an area, now obviously you think so, that the court is here, but when we look at the statute, and I think Justice Prosser alluded a little bit to this, just about the obligation, the constitutionality basically, of 55069A, and the ultimate obligation of the county in these matching funds. You're saying, as I gather it, that clearly they have the obligation and they have not met that obligation.
That's correct.
And that, therefore, if we use a you think that 55 is unconstitutional, then that's...
Well,
Under the alternative arguments that I've heard here,
well, not all of 55, please.
No. Just that.
That really isn't our point here.
Yeah. But that seems to be some of the questions that have been asked.
Right. Oh, no, there's no... Chapter 55 is not unconstitutional. Right. The County Association, I think, made that reference, but I think it's totally irresponsible to have done it. What it would make unconstitutional in this case would be just the last sentence or the last phrase that refers to that counties are required to or may not be required to put up any funds. I would like to address the equal protection argument that Mr. Lang closed with. We believe that there is a major equal protection problem and that it's essentially identical to the one that this court considered in the Watts case. In the sections of 51 that actually provide courts with authority to place people, this funding restriction that's in 5506-9A does not exist. Those provisions are 51.20 sub 13 sub C number 2 and 5120 sub 13 sub F. Now the legislature, when it enacted Wisconsin Act 1995, Wisconsin Act 92, plugged limiting language into all sorts of places in 51 and 55, and they didn't put it here. And we think that the decision not to include that funding limitation here, but including it in 5506 sub 9A, which is the precise parallel statute, because that's the one that also directs courts to place people, violates equal protection.
Wait a second. 5120 sub 13 specifically cross-references 51437, which contains the same language about paying attention to the limits of available state and federal funds and county funds required to be appropriate to match.
Yeah, interestingly enough, though, that 51437 was actually not part of the SHIELD law. The funding limitation included there was predated that and was actually there when DER was decided. So there was no... I'm saying that funding...
What difference does that make? There's similar provisions in both statutes, so there isn't a disparity for equal protection purposes.
Well, I think there is. First of all, the language in 51437 does not say a county may not be required. It says
it's
you're supposed to take into...
subsection under 437.
Four.
I'm sorry.
It says this primary governmental responsibility, and it's referring to the county government, is limited to the programs, services, and resources that the County Board of Supervisors is reasonably able to provide within the limits of available state and federal funds and of county funds required to be appropriated to match state funds. I mean, these statutes are saying substantially the same thing, and that is courts, when you're ordering these placements under 51 and 55, you've got to pay attention to the fiscal impact. I mean, that's how I read both of these.
Well, I think that if the legislature had intended to have a funding limitation in the section of 51 that I'm talking about, they would have put it there specifically and directly the way they did in 5506 sub 9A. Again, the language, although substantially similar, is not identical, and there is no requirement in 5120 that courts can't order a placement that causes county funds to be expended.
Your position is that this lack of equal protection here was a violation of the Equal Protection Clause because 55 and 51 are different as to matching funds. Is that your equal protection?
Well, they're different in terms of the specific restriction on what a court can do is in 5506-9A, and it's not in 5120. I'm at a somewhat of a disadvantage because the background information which Mr. Lang provided about the costs of this episode to the potential gloom and doom costs to the county under, if you rule in Judy Kaye's favor, because none of those none of that information is in the record. Assuming it's true, there are some things that I think you need to remember that were not necessarily included in his remarks, and that is that not a decision in favor of Judy Kaye would not actually necessarily mean that everybody on the KIPP 1B or KIPP 1A waiting list would immediately need to be served.
Why not?
Well, because not all of those people are protectively placed. And not all of those people are requesting residential services. Some are requesting other types of services. So I think that there may be, it's hard to say whether there'd be any actual expense involved with this case, but even under the scenario presented by Dunn County, I think that the effects of it have been exaggerated, and the court needs to keep that in mind. This case does only deal with these programs in the context of protective placements.
Well, even if we agreed with you on the statutory provision, in the rest of 55069A, it says that the court, in ordering protective placement, may consider, or factors to be considered in making protective placement, includes the limits of available state and federal funds and county funds required to be appropriated to match state funds. Even if the county, Dunn County, put up the 41% and took everything it was entitled to, still might not be enough to support what you might consider, or others, the best placement or the least restrictive placement. What do you do then?
Well, happily that case is not before us.
Is this limits, pardon me?
Happily that case is not before us.
Yeah, but what I'm really asking you is, are any limits or any consideration of costs here invalid in your opinion?
No, they're not. And I think that even ignoring the language you just quoted, there are at least two other factors in that criteria that courts must consider that clearly do consider cost as a criteria. First of all, if the benefits that a person would realize from the placement were exorbitant in relation to the cost of that placement, it would be appropriate for the court not to require that funds be expended for that purpose. And also, another limitation in there which is reasonable is that you're supposed to take into consideration other people who need similar services in the county. And under those two tests, I mean, especially under, if you're looking at the KIPP 1A program, where the funding limit that I say could apply in this case would be probably very high, it's likely that you would reach a court would find that on balance, requiring the county to expend funds would be reached under either of those other two cost factors before the dollar defense would even become in effect.
Weren't the costs, you probably heard all you want on that, but as I recall talking to your opposing counsel, the costs were in the middle, around $80,000 we're talking about. And that's what struck home with me about, regardless of where the funding comes from, that's a significant amount for an individual, which undoubtedly would go up rather than down. I can't predict that, but that seems to be the way things go. And we're looking at potentially 95 people in Dunn County alone. So there would be, if you multiply that, or I assume that we're talking about 95 people that would be affected by this, you're talking of several million dollars just in Dunn County based upon the figures that we've been given here. Is that, if I misstated, or is that inaccurate?
Actually, it's accurate as to the, I think, without checking your math, Justice Wilcox. I assume it is, $80,000 is about the annual cost of the placement, but you have to remember that of that $80,000, Dunn County is only being required to put up $47 a day, which is about 19% of that $80,000 cost. The rest of the funds, at least as they're presented in the trial court, were coming from the state.
Yeah,
so
I guess what I was getting at is that when you look at the, you know, it's not just this case, but we're looking at the impact on the state as a whole, and I think someone said that, well, half of the placements were possibly in one particular county, that that's going to have a significant effect. And so you're not saying we should not look at that, but that should not, that's just one of the factors that this court should.
Well, I don't think you or a trial court should look at that in the context of Judy Kaye's individual protective placement.
Okay.
It's a policy consideration, but not one that should be considered when deciding where Judy Kaye should be.
I'm concerned about equal protection since both you and opposing counsel selected that among many other provisions to concentrate limited time on. And the county takes the position that Chapter 51 people are treated the same way as Chapter 55 people are in terms of that the county is not required to put up match funds. And we looked at 51.437. Now, that deals with developmental disabilities, and Judy Kaye is developmentally disabled, if I understand the facts.
Yes, that's right.
Within the definition of 51.437?
Yes.
Okay. But my question then is, there are people covered under Chapter 51 that are not developmentally disabled. Is that right?
That's true.
So 51.437.4, which you disagree with, but could be read as including a substantially similar provision, only covers some people in Chapter 51, not everyone.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
So what about the other people in Chapter 51? Are they limited by this match state funds language?
I don't know the answer to that question offhand, Your Honor.
If they are, then what do you base your equal protection argument on?
Well, the equal protection argument, I think, it still goes back to the Watts case and the fact that the pool of people who are protectively placed or involuntarily committed, the distinction between the 51 and 55 population is merely a creature of the statutory scheme that we've adopted in the wake of the Lessard case, and is not something that can be, is not a functional difference between these populations.
Yeah, well, that's my point. Mm-hmm. If 51, all of Chapter 51 people had this requirement, the county may not be required to provide funding in addition to its funds that are required to be appropriated to match state funds in order to serve that individual. 51 had it for everybody under 51. 55 had it for everyone under 55. Why do you have an equal protection problem?
Well, the equal protection problem is still in the actual application of it in our argument, that the there isn't a specific requirement in the language in 51, and there is in 55.
That's your position. Okay. But if there is the same language, then what? Do you have to lose on the equal protection argument?
It's possible, but I think then you move on to our due process arguments that are
in. I've got other points. Okay.
To the extent that this is an attack on the disparity in the statutory scheme, do we need the Attorney General?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you, Justice Sykes.
To the extent that this is an attack on disparities, equal protection problems in the statutory scheme. Do we need the Attorney General here?
But the Attorney General was notified of this case and declined to participate in it.
Okay.
My time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Lang, Attorney Lang.
I'll begin by addressing some of the concerns about disparity between Chapter 51 and Chapter 55. Within Chapter 51, there are other provisions, and they're not identically worded to the county may not be required language in 5506-9A.
But you agree 51.437 is only covers certain people in Chapter
yes.
51. It doesn't cover the whole chapter.
That particular section does not. However, the policy in Chapter 51, 51.001, contains similar language. Section 51.42, which discusses county liability, indicates that it talks about what the county's responsibility is and commitment, and it says this primary responsibility is limited to the programs, services, and resources that the County Board of Supervisors is reasonably able to provide within the limits of available state and federal funds and of county funds required to be appropriated to match state funds. The similar language is also...
What subsection is that? 142 is pretty long.
1B.
Okay.
I've cited it in my
right, that's community page. Mental health, et cetera. Does that cover everybody in 51?
Yes. In section 51.61, sub E and sub F, which is, that's 51.61 is the patient's rights section. That also discusses the same limitation in terms of what a Chapter 51 patient's rights are with respect to services. It refers to the limitations of funding that's available, state and federal funds and county funds required to be appropriated to match state funds.
I have a statutory interpretation question on 5506 sub 9A, and this language is mirrored in other statutes, as you've just pointed out. We've been zeroing in on the language that requires the decision makers on these protective placement cases to consider the limits of available state and federal funds and of county funds required to be appropriated to match state funds. I'm focusing on the required to be appropriated. Required by whom or by what authority?
The county's interpretation of that is the community aid's section of any county's human services operating budget. Those funds are required to be appropriated. Now, it's true there's a dollar-for-dollar offset if all of those funds aren't used, but as a practical matter, I think they are. And in fact, in Dunn County, we didn't stop at $185,000. It was $1.8 million on top of that, and so the required part was allocated and made available by the county, and then much, much more was added to that.
So you're referring to or interpreting required to be appropriated as vesting the decision-making in the county as opposed to the court?
Well,
or does that refer to the statutory or regulatory scheme?
I think it refers to the statutory or regulatory scheme, the programs that all county human services agencies operate under are created by statutes and affected by state and federal statutes.
So you would read that as requiring the court, when making these placement decisions, to consider the limits of available state and federal funds and of county funds required by statute or regulation to be appropriated?
Yes. In under the KIPP 1A program, there's not a statute or a regulation that requires the county to appropriate funds in order to receive state funds. Those funds are available whether the county adds its own money or not.
But it seems to me that the your opponents are reading it to, or are interpreting it to read, the limits of available state and federal funds and of county funds required by the court to be appropriated to match state funds.
I think that would render all of the changes that were done in Act 92 meaningless.
Because that's basically what the court did in this case, right? The court required
yes.
the county to put up the matching funds to place her in the community.
Yes, and I think that was the state of the law followed before Act 92 was enacted. And if I may, the statutory construction that all of the funds are state funds, I think you can extend that even. I think it's... Oh, I see my time is ended.
You should finish the answer.
I think that construction is strained because you can make the same analysis on the county level as well. The county utilizes the funds. We receive it from the state. Once it's in the county budget, it's county money. And I disagree with the interpretation that all of it is really state money. The programs that the legislature knew about, and in fact that this court analyzed in the DER case, they're composed of state and federal money, and that's just the way that it works.
Chief?
Yes.
Just for clarification, in your brief, do you argue that the county is required to contribute anything?
Not with respect to the KIPP 1A program. The county's argument is that it is not required to provide additional funds.
In your brief, do you argue that it's the requirement is fulfilled by the community aids, or is that something
that was not argued in the brief? It
you're arguing it now.
Well, it wasn't the community aids funding, the base funding, wasn't addressed in the circuit court. The issue was the medical assistance, the MA waiver funding program that would provide the means for Judy K to receive a community placement. Absent KIPP 1A funds, all of the funds would likely be county funds.
Just again for clarification, your position then is that under the statute 9A, that nothing is required to be appropriated, nothing additional is required to be paid by the county, is that correct?
With respect to the MA waiver programs, yes. I can retract somewhat from the position in there or clarify it. The county is required to appropriate community aids funds.
Your opposing counsel indicated that under 514232 that community aid 9.89 is not a required match. That is, that if you don't put it in, then you just don't get anything.
Yes, as I understand it, if the county does not expend its portion of community aids, the state, there's a dollar for dollar offset then on the amount that the state contributes to the community aids base fund. But in this particular case, that was $185,000 from the county. And in addition, the county added $1.8 million. And so the level that we're talking about in terms of finding a placement for DBK, we're not starting at the zero and saying, what, you know, do we have community aids funds available? We're starting at $1.8 million plus the $5.6 million from state and federal funds plus $1.2 million from...
And all of that comes within the... what I'm focusing on is the definition of the statute and how you're interpreting the statute.
The limitation, the last portion of 9A, yes, it's an absolute limit. It says if the county is required to appropriate funds in order to match state funds, then it's required to do that.
Let me see if this is your interpretation of the statute. The county may not be required, and I'm adding words, by a court may not be required by a court to provide funding in addition to its funds that are required to be appropriated to match state, may not be required by a court to provide funding in addition to its funds that are required by statute or regulation to be appropriated to match state funds.
Yes.
And that's how you're reading it.
Yes, thank
and
you.
It's my understanding that there are no state statutes and no state regulations that require a county to appropriate match funds.
Not for the KIPP 1A.
And even on community funds, you're not required to do it. There is not a stick, but there's a carrot. You appropriate it, you get more money.
Yes.
So that means that required by statute or regulation to be appropriated to match is zero at the present moment.
Yes.
Okay. I think that answers your question. Thank you, Council.
Thank you.
Thank you to Mr. Agopian and to Mr. Lang, both of you, for excellent arguments in a case that is very difficult to understand, let alone decide. That concludes our hearing.